Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Baltimore lost at home, a bad loss on Monday night to Kansas City. Baltimore is going to go out and try and score 3,000 points against Washington at Washington. They are giving, this is an enormous number. Baltimore is a 13.5 point road favorite. And Carville would say, hold your nose, hold your nose, and pick Washington. Hold your nose.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
As fate would have it, Carville will join us later, and I'll find out, since he picks his own games, if he is going to pick that game at all. We'll see. We'll see. Michael and I are 6 feet, 1 inch apart, properly socially distanced, especially given the circumstances in the White House. You want to stay especially properly socially distanced. I'll get to that in a second.
You do a good Carville.
A couple. Thank you. Well, I've listened to him for a lot of years. A couple of emails that I think need to be read first, and then we'll get into the show. From Carl in Oswego, New York. Oswego, New York is in upstate New York. Hi, Dr. Mr. Tony. This is your monthly reminder that a full moon is coming this week. I thought it was last night. I thought the first full moon, because there'll be a harvest moon this month, I thought the moon full moon was last night, which means you'll be able to see the moon setting in the west during your morning walks with Chessie. Another thing you might notice is a bright star that appears in the east before the sun comes up. That is actually Venus. And if you go outside in the evening after the sun has set, the brightest star-like object this summer has been Jupiter, with Saturn to its immediate left. Information for life, pending clear skies. The last part of that, those three words, pending clear skies, was tremendously important, because last night in Washington, D.C., it was raining. It was overcast. It was raining. It was raining this morning and overcast. So I missed the full moon. Now, two nights ago, I saw the full moon. I saw it in the southeastern sky, maybe about 8 o'clock at night, and it was beautiful. But I didn't know that it was completely full. I thought it was full last night.
I was hoping for a full moon tonight so we could have a werewolf bar mitzvah situation.
There might be a full moon
spooky,
tonight.
Scary.
We are going to have clear skies in Washington tonight, so everybody in Washington will be able to see it. From Jonathan Bennett, or Benet, I'm not sure. On Monday, I was hitting range balls at Needwood Golf Course, a municipal course in Montgomery County, Maryland, when I noticed that the stalls behind me were reserved for a kid's instructional class. The instructor began the session by talking to the kids about someone they'd never met and probably never heard of, but who was instrumental in creating the program, the first tee program, that would help them begin their competitive golf adventure. He said that this man had recently passed away, but that he had been a great golfer, a member at four of the greatest courses in America, had gone to Harvard Law School, and was instrumental in creating programs to help kids learn to play golf. He was talking about Jack Vardaman. I thought of you and your moving words about Jack, and I knew I had to share this story, because if I didn't listen to this podcast, I wouldn't have known who Jack Vardaman was. You see, Jack was from Alabama, and I'm from Alabama. And although I went to Auburn, I always like to hear stories of Alabamans who have made a positive difference around my adopted home of Metro D.C., even if they root for the Tide. Isn't that lovely?
Had to be Adam Fishman.
That's lovely. This is Jonathan
Bennett. No, I'm saying the golf instructor.
Oh, that's right. Oh, okay. For the first
instructor to the stars.
Okay.
Used to give Spike Braun lessons.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, how many things can we open with? Well, there's a lot of things I would have opened with. I would have opened with Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw has had a lot of trouble in the postseason, and particularly in the World Series. This is not the World Series he pitched in last night, but he pitched his team into the second round with no earned runs and 13 strikeouts, and waved off a reliever in the eighth. Said, no, get out of here. Get out of here. I'm not dealing with you now. So I could have opened with that. The Dodgers moved on yesterday. The A's moved on. The Padres prevented the Cardinals from moving on. And my theory is that the established teams are having less difficulty moving on than the unestablished teams.
For example, established and older.
Yeah, the Yankees move on. The Braves move on. The Astros move on. These are established older teams. But the Padres thwarted. And the Padres were down 4-0 in the first
and
or the second
chances.
Inning.
That was the longest four innings I've seen this postseason.
Yeah, and then they got five home runs after the fifth. They got two by Fernando Tatis Jr., two by Will Myers, and one by Manny Machado, none of whom was on that team 3 years ago, I don't believe. So that's exciting. They'll play today. They'll play the Cardinals. The winner moves on. I could have talked about that. I could talk about the Broncos beating the Jets, except it's just hot garbage, that game. 2-0-3
garbage.
Teams. That, yeah, I mean, Adam Gase will likely be fired. Likely be fired at this point. It's nothing to talk about, really.
Wasn't it great to see Rip?
Yeah, Mark Rippon's nephew, Brett, was the starter for Broncos. He had two touchdowns, but he also had three picks. And who was doing the game? Troy was doing the game. And Troy was saying, you know, he's not physically gifted, but he's really smart and he makes the right decisions. Three picks is not great in your first game. But he won the game.
It's the win.
Or I could talk about Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers taking a job that he shouldn't take. Doc Rivers is going to get a job, if not this year, next year. But he quickly took a job within days of being fired by the Clippers. He took a job in the East, an easier conference to win. Easier conference win, but he took a job at Philadelphia where the expectations are out of control when you consider this. The two best players on that team, Ben Simmons and the yappy Joel Embiid, they don't like each other and they don't play together particularly well. So a change is going to have to happen at that team and the coach is going to be swept out if he doesn't win. I would not have taken that job if I was Doc Rivers.
Better than teams are saying we're going to coach by committee.
Well, that is the other story. And the other story, when I found out about this yesterday after the PTI show, I was stunned that we hadn't led with it on the PTI show. The incredibly miserable and toxic Kyrie Irving is at it again, telling his new teammate, Kevin Durant, that we don't really have on a podcast. We don't really have a head coach. We have a collaborative effort. You know, there's Jacque Vaughn, there's Steve Nash. You shouldn't even have this job. And there's me and there's KD. And we're going to run the team. I mean, honestly, if I'm Steve Nash, I run for the hills. I get out. Just get out. It's a disaster. Kyrie Irving is poison. He's a very, very good player. He has a championship. He was great in the championship series when he played with LeBron at Cleveland. But he's poisonous. Look what he did in Boston. Look at it. Look how much better Boston is, though they didn't advance any further. They're better without him. And the Nets, he walked into the Nets and he just said, you know, most of the players we have here aren't any good. We just got to get rid of them. How's that for saying hello to your teammates? How's that? He fired the coach, Kenny Atkinson, played like 10 seconds for him, got him fired, apparently wasn't consulted enough about Steve Nash, and has decided Steve Nash isn't really the coach. He isn't really the coach. LeBron James has no coaches. He pays no attention to coaches. But LeBron James has now been to 10 finals. Kyrie Irving has been to one final with LeBron James. I don't know, maybe two. He's toxic, and I could talk about that. But that ain't the news. The news is that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, has tested positive for the coronavirus, as has his wife, as has one of his big-time aides, Hope Hicks. Now, you say to yourself, well, what is, you know, of course, these guys, Biden's going to get it too. They're out all the time. They're around different people all the time. They're at debates. They're at rallies. I just don't know how. This is not like me doing my show in a dining room or doing my show in an attic and keeping the people around me. Yeah, just not that many people around me. I mean, I could get it too. Look, I hope Donald Trump recovers and I hope he recovers fully. And I have no idea what his symptoms are or are not. And I don't know that we'll ever know the truth about that. I don't. I expect somebody in the White House to say within the next 12 hours, well, we can't have this election, you know, in the first week of November. It's not fair. I mean, I got a guy who's 14 days under quarantine, can't get out, can't do anything. This is not fair. That election's going to have to be moved. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I expect that to happen. Michael, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I think you have to try and figure out what is the number of days under which you would start to say, okay, he is showing symptoms because I'm not seeing X or Y, which is I'm not seeing any on-camera appearances, or I'm seeing very limited. I'm seeing only things through the phone onto network cable news. And if that's the case, why don't you hold on to that message? And if you start to see no symptoms or very mild symptoms through that first week, as you're going through that quarantine, why don't you try and then just spin this to say, this has affected every single person in this country. I got this working for you. I've made mistakes. I mean, you could actually have a vault here where I've made mistakes and this is allowing me some clarity. I don't necessarily think that's the case. Or if your polling says this, as again, maybe if you're showing no symptoms or very mild symptoms, you just double down and say, I got this for you, and we're going to move past this. I'm the example that this is how you can move forward. We have 32 days, I think it is, from today.
So you think that Donald Trump, who has never been an empathetic person, can be an empathetic person and use this strategically to help himself win the election?
I think the situation I described, the latter is more likely, which would be doubling down and actually be a very dangerous position. And that is if he has a very mild or symptom-free case. I think I was going back to the words that President Obama used during the convention, where he said, when I left office, I hoped he could grow into the office. And I think it was very careful to use the office because it was distancing from the person. And I think that's where a lot of us were when we didn't see this election coming in 2016. We didn't necessarily want to see it. We couldn't come to grips to it. But you started to say, hopefully there is some grain of, I don't know, responsibility, of awareness, of growing into that option, which office, which we did not see. So again, it's that latter. I don't think there's going to be the turn of I'll soften or I'll listen to more advice. But I do think it's dangerous. If you're in some of those swing states and you start to see we've lost people on our lines, we've lost family members. And if I see this guy recovering, I think there's the path forward to all of us.
What do you think, Nigel?
I think, first of all, that they won't be able to move the date. They might talk about that. But I think your country, I think that's very difficult to do.
Yeah,
but I think
it's never been
really
done.
I think for Trump, the good news for him is he loves McDonald's. So if he eats several Big Macs, won't that just sort of eliminate any sort of COVID symptoms?
Well, if he coats them with Clorox and he puts that in his system. Yeah.
Well, then you start wondering what percentage of voters are voting today because they're doing, you know, you're doing absentee or you're doing voting through mail.
I mean, this is, again, I wish him a full and speedy recovery. We've seen other leaders with this. Boris Johnson in England, and he's not the only one, the guy in Brazil, you know, that we've seen other leaders with this. We've seen governors. The governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, has this right now. There are a bunch of governors who have it around the country because, again, consider what their job is. Consider what their life is. They can't really do what I do. They can't work in the attic. They just can't. And to my knowledge, most of these people have recovered. I think it is, wow, it's such a wild card in the election, in the path forward for both of these candidates, both of them. Joe Biden's sitting there. He's sitting there in a room in Delaware probably saying, well, what do I do now? What do I do to exploit this? What can I do, right?
Well, this is now,
you're running for president. You can't. You got to take the gloves off. You're running for president.
The voting is already happening, which you would think is swinging it more to Biden than it already was. But if and when you do have a recovery, the final 2-3 weeks leading up to in-person voting, you're going to have a president, if he recovers fully, pointing a finger saying, you know what, while he was hiding out in his bunker,
yeah.
I mean, again, he takes things very personally, and when he actually did hide in a bunker back in June, he's going to bring that back up and turn it around and say, I was out for you. I was on the ground for you. I was holding rallies. I was listening to you.
We'll see. We'll take a break. We'll be all sports when we return. Promise, because Chuck Todd's not on. Jason Lock on 4 when we return. Talk about football. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser
Show. This is a Simply Safe ad, and here's the thing about home security companies. Most trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, and lousy customer support. So while there are a lot of options out there, there's only one no-brainer, Simply Safe. Michael, you've attached Simply Safe to our alleged studio in WMAL.
Yeah, attached is an interesting term for that.
Well, isn't that what you do? You put the sensors...
I set it up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, attached is not the right... Is it a bad verb?
Okay.
Simply Safe's got everything you need to protect your home with none of the drawbacks of traditional home security. It's got an arsenal of sensors and cameras to blanket every room, window, and door, tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring keeps watch day and night, ready to send police, fire, and medical professionals if there's an emergency. You can set it up yourself in under an hour. It doesn't say attach.
Well, I am attached,
but it says just peel.
Feeling of safety.
Yeah, just peel and stick the sensors exactly where you need them. So that's an attachment to me. No technician required, no contract, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees, no fine print. It all starts at $15 a month. And I'm not the only one who thinks Simply Safe is great. U.S. News & World Report named it, quote, the best overall home security of 2020. head to simplysafe.com/Tony and get a free HD camera. You listen to the show, you sign up, you get a free HD camera. Simply Safe is spelled S-I-M-P-L-I. That's simplysafe.com/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
I count my blessings like the stars from my front porch swing, like prayers that drift along the wind.
This is Emily Doze. She's released a new album. She said she'd feel honored if you'd play one of the songs on your show. We're going to play two. We're going to play two. This is called Milk and Honey. And again, at the end of the show, you can listen to Emily Doze without me interrupting her, which is usually better. She's very good. What a pleasant.
She is.
It sounds like, what's her name? Sarah Bareilles? Is that her name? Do I have that woman's name right?
A little bit. More country.
Yeah, but it's a nice, very nice voice. She plays in Jason Lock and Four of CBS Sports and his own fabulous radio show from 2 to 6 every day in Baltimore that he'll plug later. Let me just start with this, because the NBA avoided it and the NHL avoided it and baseball dealt with it and now the NFL has to deal with it. And that is the Titans situation, which feels like an outbreak because there's 11 people. There's 5 players and 6 staff. And that game with Pittsburgh has been postponed this week. What is going on there, and what is the ripple effect, you know, for the NFL?
Well, you know, I think it was miraculous, nothing short of miraculous, that we entered week 3 with a single player on the COVID restricted list in the entire league.
Yeah.
AJ Terrell of the Falcons. And we've all lived through this. We all know what the other sports have gone through, like you alluded to, and we know that given the magnitude of this operation, you know, the scale of this thing, both in terms of how many people are required in a building to get through a day of practice, which is 3 times as many people who were in each NHL bubble, for instance, and because of that, and them not going to, you know, a bubble and not having these leagues essentially quarantine in a city or cities, that there were going to be instances where the virus was a factor. And I still think it's kind of miraculous that it's only a factor in one city right now with one team. And I think it's kind of miraculous that the Minnesota Vikings aren't dealing with this, given what we now know of the Titans and given the fact that the Vikings were their opponent over the weekend. And you know where it goes, Tony? I don't think anybody knows. This won't be the last time that NFL players and coaches test positive for COVID. This probably won't be the last time that a team or team's work week is disrupted or altered because they can't go in their buildings for an unspecified amount of time. I don't know. You know, we talked about this before the season, and my thought was they will absolutely start this thing. They will get this thing off the ground. It will fly. It will float. Will it float and fly from July or, well, I guess they end up starting in August through February? I don't know. I don't think anybody can guarantee that. But they will do everything they can to establish protocols and regulations that allow them to try to play football. It remains to be seen how long they're able to do that.
Well, I just want to point out, as I point out pretty much all the time, they own all their own stadiums.
Yes.
So if they want to keep going, and they've got to make sure that all teams play the same amount of games. So if they want to get through 16 and that takes them till May, so what? The NFL can play the Super Bowl whenever they want to play the Super Bowl, and hundreds of millions of people are going to watch it. So they are not under,
sure,
to me, they're not under the same time constraint that baseball, you know what, they're not.
Well,
they're
some
not.
People, yeah, like they were, you know, there was a possibility that they might play on a Tuesday, and people are like, well, is that, how's that going to work? Is that fair? I'm like, well, guess what? then teams will start playing on Tuesdays with regularity, so they still get, you know, five or six days between games. Like, what else is going to happen at that stadium on a Tuesday afternoon or a Tuesday night? There's not going to be a Taylor Swift concert. There's not going to be the tractor trailer pool. There's most of the country. There's not going to be a high school game or a college game, you know, already scheduled for there. Like, what, you know what I mean? What you don't have to worry about, you know, altering your tailgating, you know, plans or reimbursing people for tickets. Like, baseball was making it up on the fly, right? I mean, the Cardinals didn't play for 16 days, and then they played a doubleheader every day for 2 weeks. Like, you do what you got to do if we really want to get this thing done. And I think most of these owners are going to really want to get this thing done as long as it's remotely feasible to.
Let me bring up a word that is, you know, going to be off-putting, and the word is punishment. The NFL is punishing coaches for not wearing masks. There's a possibility that the people on the Raiders who attended a big charity function without masks may be punished. If a team has an outbreak like this, and it is determined that they were lax in the way they went about their business, and I don't know how you do that, but it's possible. It's possible. Oh, yeah. Do you see punishment for these teams?
I mean, if you violated these protocols, like, this goes back to what, March, when they start meeting with local, you know, governors, mayors, medical officials throughout the country, World Health Organization, NFLPA, and you collectively bargain new rules and regulations for not just players, but to ensure as best you can the health and safety of the players, new health and safety regulations and protocols for everyone who's allowed in these buildings, and you create a tier system. And you tell these municipalities, look, we know some of you still have regulations against gatherings of these sizes, and we understand that. But here's what we're going to try to do to keep these from being spreading events, to mitigate the risk. We're all going to wear these sidelines. We're going to try to practice social distancing. We're not going to have the players exchanging jerseys and gallivanting around between each other after the games. We're not going to have the media in the locker rooms. We're not, you know, so, like, they made promises. And they also put in writing protocols that everybody agreed to. These are now part of the game day operations manual. So if you run afoul of those, it's the same thing as running afoul of what you're supposed to be doing, deflating and inflating footballs. It's seen in the same vein as if you have somebody in the press box videotaping the other sideline, and that's against the rules, we're going to investigate it. We're going to come down on you. You know, if you have a bounty system that goes against our rules, we're going to investigate it. We're going to come down on you. It's seen in the same vein as those types of infractions. So no one should be surprised that they've been getting these sternly worded memos. And I reported on the NFL Today Sunday morning that, like, suspensions and loss of draft picks are now where we're at for repeat offenders with any of these violations that are regarding the COVID regulations. And then sure enough, on Tuesday, Troy Vincent puts it in writing. There's a memo that goes to all teams. And that's where we sit, Tony. So, you know, the Raiders have a bunch of issues that are being looked into right now. The Titans situation is obviously being looked into. And they continue to monitor sidelines and ask for videos of, you know, practices and videos of inside these buildings. Because, again, this has been collectively bargained. They have made promises and assurances to government officials. And if they're not living up to it, they need to find out why, and they need to find out who continues to violate these things. And then they'll deal with them.
Okay, let me get to football. Specifically, the biggest game of last week was the Monday night game.
Yeah.
Excuse me, in which the Kansas City Chiefs handled Baltimore, and they handled Lamar Jackson. I mean, this was not close. Patrick Mahomes was it, and Lamar Jackson was not. What was, you live in Baltimore.
Yeah.
What was the reaction to that? And how many points do you expect them to beat the Washington team by on Sunday? Because I think that could be 35. That's just me.
Yeah, no, that could be 42-10. Like, honestly, that wouldn't shock me. This is not a good matchup for them, Tony, and they continue to be their own worst enemy in regards to this matchup, because there's certain, we've seen enough of Reed and Mahomes now to know there are certain truisms. And we've seen enough of the Ravens and Lamar Jackson to know there are certain truisms that apply with them as well. And when they're at their truly best, and you will probably see this against the WFT this weekend, they're employing a multitude of running backs. They are employing a fullback over half the time with a blocking tight end. And they are dazzling you and dizzying you in the run game to then open up things for them to start slinging the ball all over the place through the air as well. They run to get a lead. They run to sap your will, to kind of steal your soul from your defense, to make them start questioning their ability to hang with you. And then that opens up the entire playbook. And then in regards to Reed and Mahomes, if you keep blitzing them, they will keep killing you. They will kill you in the screen game.
Yes.
If you want to blitz defensive backs, they will kill you downfield. The only way to mitigate the risk is to try to get a pass rush with four and play multiple deep safeties. The Ravens didn't do any of that. The Ravens kept blitzing them. They kept bringing safeties. They kept bringing defensive backs. They kept bringing linebackers. It wasn't 7, 8, or 9, but even 5 or 6 puts the numbers in his advantage when he's that on and Andy Reid is that on. And so that's what was going on there. And then on the other side, Tone, their first 6 carries go for 60 yards. Lamar's got 2 runs for 35 yards. It's 1st and 10 in the red zone at the 15. They move the ball down into the 10. It's pass, 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 chip shot field goal instead of going for it on 4th and 3 when they're a team that goes for it. And then the next possession is pass, pass, pass. And then Devin Duvernay takes one to the house, and it's 13-10, and the defense finally gets a stand. And it's like, well, they're going to help the defense out now and play complimentary football and get back to running the ball and get the fullback out now. No, it's pass, 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 Tone.
Yeah, it's a mistake.
15 of their final 18 plays in the first half are passes. One run for Lamar Jackson after he's shown that they can't stop him. So that's got something to do with it, too.
Okay, I'm glad. I just wanted to know about that, and I knew you would know about that. How does the league feel about two dreadful teams in New York? Does that matter anymore?
Well, it matters for ratings. It matters for their broadcast partners.
Right.
When they're so bad. They're so abysmal that people don't even want to watch them get bludgeoned. They just find other things to do. You know, they've been mismanaged. There's no other way to look at it from ownership on down. They have created situations and circumstances where they have, for a while, inspired sort of angst and anger from their fan base, and I think they're now reaching the point where it's almost, who cares? Which is the worst. Which is the worst thing for a business that really requires, you know, people buying tickets and turning on their television and buying jerseys and being invested in your product. And it's the ability to sell hope if you have nothing else to sell. I don't know how either one sells hope. I expect the Giants to get absolutely eviscerated again this weekend. And the real problem becomes, too, when they stop believing in your plan for your quarterback. And we're not, you know, we're barely to October, and people are talking about, well, if they keep losing games and they're both picking in the top three, like, are they going to draft another guy? And once the one coach is fired or one GM's fired, what are things going to look like? I mean, we're not even a quarter of the way into the season. So I don't know what can be done about that. If I'm Steve Tisch and that Giants ownership group and I've put all this money into it, but, you know, it's still maybe I don't have the degree of autonomy I'd like, I would be really frustrated. And then the Jets situation might even get more batty, more bizarre, pending the results of this election, if Woody Johnson's on the plane back here in December. And then what is this relationship between Woody and Chris Johnson? And, you know, Woody didn't hire any of these guys. And it just starts at the top, and neither ownership group has made strong, sound decisions for quite some time. And I don't think those teams are anywhere close to being good anytime soon.
You said last week that, you know, you didn't think people were going to get fired because it's an odd season and there's no real revenue.
Many, you know what I mean? I don't think we'll get the average number of, you know,
right,
7 or 8.
Do you think Gase will be fired within the next 2 days?
It's not out of the realm of possibility. This wasn't, despite the way some were framing it, like do or die, like he doesn't right. win this game and they're going to throw right. him out of the locker room right after and, you know, go pack your bags. But these, I mean, again, you get to points like this where guys come into the season on the hot seat because the people who pay their salaries haven't set things up in a sort of cogent, smart manner to begin with. So, yeah, he could be, I mean, it could come at any point. But I could also see Chris Johnson saying, nah, this is my guy. This is my first chance to really set something up.
Right.
I'm going to ride it out. Now, Woody gets back on the scene and he's no longer in the UK, who knows? You know, it's do we think, like, do we want to have somebody do two jobs for 12 weeks? Like, is Greg Williams now going to have to try to continue to make chicken salad out of you-know-what on the defense, right. plus also try to coach this team? Is that going to make the product any better? Normally, you might give the fans their red meat and say, okay, they stopped coming to my games. They don't support this coach. They're showing up with paper bags. I'm going to throw them a bone. There's nobody in the stands.
No, you don't have that this year. No,
you know, so
you don't have
it. Like, do I want to pay this guy's salary so he can go home and hang out with his family, and then I still have, I'm left with this terrible product, except now I'm having people do more jobs than I paid them for? I don't know, but will he be coaching them in 2021? I can't fathom a scenario where that's the case.
Yeah. All right, plug your radio show. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Tone. Inside Access on 10. Oh, Copper just jumped up. Sorry, bud. On 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. We're on from 2 to 6 every day, talking a ton of NFL, not just the Ravens, but yes, we do. Oh, boy. We do talk a lot about the Ravens. It's amazing. I'm on for 4 hours every day, Tone, and you don't hear Copper bark at all when I'm up in the attic. But right now in the living room, we've got plenty of Copper. So anyway, check us out on 105.7. In Baltimore, or listen live anywhere on the radio.com app. And hope you guys enjoy the games.
I will talk to you next week. Jason Lock and Fora, boys and girls. We will come back with some gambling. James Carville and Jeff Ma. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Lincoln Financial ad. This new world we're living in has me and my family talking a lot more. I mean, Michael and I talk a lot. That's great. We're talking about everything from how much greater was the greatest of all time than today's greatest, to how to make sourdough bread, which Elizabeth can make from scratch, to how excited we are that football is finally back. And trust me, that last one is important. We're also talking about the fact that baseball playoffs are on, because both Michael and I watch baseball and love baseball. I can't keep watching Jesse run circles in the backyard and call that a spectator sport. But when she has two or three Frisbees in her mouth and she's saying hello to Nigel in the morning, it is lovely.
Ready to tangle.
Despite how talkative we all are, the people at Lincoln Financial want to point out the one conversation that most people still haven't had, your financial plans. So do find time to talk to your loved ones about it, because the more we talk, the better we plan, protect, and retire. That's why Lincoln Financial is here to help you get the right questions to start that conversation at LincolnFinancial.com.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This again is Emmy Doze. I wonder if I said Emmy or I said Emily the first time. It's Emmy, E-M-M-I-E, Emmy Doze. This is called The House on the Corner. This is from her new album. We have played two of her songs today, which are lovely. You can listen to them in full at the end of the podcast and not have us interrupting. Michael, how do people send their original music in?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. And this song has a much more of a Sarah Bareilles feel to it.
Yeah, Sarah Bareilles, is that?
Bareilles, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't she write that Broadway musical, Waitress?
Yeah. Great carpool karaoke on the YouTube episode with Ben Platt.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we were supposed to have Carville. We're always supposed to have Carville. Carville went 0-4. He didn't just lose his triple play with New Orleans, as I thought he would, because I like Aaron Rodgers in that game. But when he bet on Georgia and gave 27.5, because Arkansas stinks so badly, he happily gave 27.5. He won by 27. He lost by the half. So he went 0-4. And as we know, sometimes when James has a bad week, we don't hear from James again. Now, it is also reasonable for me to suggest this, that James Carville is one of the most astute and successful political consultants in the history of this country. And given the fact that there has been a major shakeup to the campaign with the announcement that the president has tested positive for coronavirus, his phone could be ringing off the hook. And that stuff pays money. and is much more important than him talking to us, right? So those are the possibilities out there. But we bring you Jeff Ma, because we always bring you Jeff Ma. We love Jeff Ma, and Jeff's podcast is called Bet the Process. Jeff did not have a great week. Jeff was 2-3 last week. He's 7-8 overall. I hope you've gotten off the Jets. Well, you wouldn't have the Jets anyway because they just lost last night. But you got to get off the Jets for the rest of time. I am totally interested, though. You pick your own games. I am totally interested in the home dog of the Washington football team. 13.5 against Baltimore. Baltimore got beat bad by Kansas City. I think Baltimore's going to win that game by 35 points. Are you betting that game or staying away from it?
You know, it was on my list as I got on here, and I had about 7 or 8 games. I actually do like Washington that game. It's not one of the ones that I was going to pick. Okay. Fell off the list. I think that if you're going to bet that game, you can wait, because I think it will go up. I think it's showing 14 some places and could show higher. It was interesting because even after that sort of poor Monday night performance, we didn't see a drop in that line. So I think there's going to be a lot of support for Baltimore there. And I do think it's too many points. I mean, the narrative that you're saying, Tony, is probably the narrative that everyone's thinking, which is that Baltimore is angry. But, you know, Washington has been, even in last week's game, I had Cleveland in that game personally, and, you know, I felt lucky to get out with a win because it was really just Haskins' turnovers that caused that. And otherwise, you know, Washington had been able to move the ball to some degree and was able to stop Cleveland to some degree. So I think the 14 is probably a pretty good bet if you're looking to bet on your football team.
Can I ask a strategy question? If you are a gambler and you notice that the coach of a particular team, Ron Rivera in this case, doesn't use his timeouts at the end of games, seems to give up on the game and doesn't really care to try and put points up, doesn't that make you stay away from that team?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly coaching plays a big role, but I mean, those things are often on the margin in any individual game. So it's, you know, does that influence you by half a point? Maybe, but it's pretty hard to quantify, unfortunately. And so, it's not something that I think, you know, you look at like a coach like Belichick that's been traditionally able to outperform the spread and, you know, that you take that into account, but that's just such an outlier.
Okay. All right. Give us your games. Tell us what we want.
I'm going to take Cleveland plus the 4.5 against Dallas. You know, Dallas has obviously been a pretty up and down team this year. Pretty good on offense, but definitely has had some challenges as their offensive line has been unhealthy. The guy to watch there, obviously, is Tyron Smith on their offensive line. If he's not playing, certainly Cleveland is a big play here. But Cleveland's played pretty well this year. Their offense has been amongst the tops in yards per play, and I think that getting 4.5 here is good value.
Dallas probably should be 0-3, but Dallas does score a lot of points late, and Cleveland's two wins are against Cincinnati and Washington, right? I mean, not hard teams.
No, not world beaters for sure. I'm going to take the Chargers plus the 7 against Tampa. Like, there is still, I still have this notion that, you know, and it may end up killing me this year, that Brady and that offense are more pedestrian than people realize. The real thing is that Tampa's defense has really shown up this year and are, I think, number 2 in yards per play allowed. But I think the Chargers bounce back here. Their defense is pretty solid. Their offense has been reasonable, even with Herbert, and I like them plus the 7.
Really? That's interesting. You don't like their doctor, though, because their doctor injected Tyrod Taylor in the lung and punctured his lung.
Yeah, I mean, it's the definition of malpractice, right?
So it seems to me. Yes, it seems seemed pretty easy one to me. Okay, what else?
I'm going to take Jacksonville plus the 3 points. This is more a bet against Cincy than really a buy on Jacksonville. I mean, Cincy is still, even with that tie against Philly last week, they are the last in the league in terms of yards per play. I think they're down at like 4.2 yards per play. They just have
really?
A very bad offense. Yeah.
Even with Burrow, because Burrow looks good, doesn't he? I mean, we both agree Burrow looks pretty good.
Certainly that's the narrative, but like they can't move the ball on offense. I don't know if any people out there who play fantasy sports have Joe Mixon on their team. They know it's been abysmal so far this year for him. So I think as a team, we may be, as a fan base, we may be kind of looking at Burrow and saying, oh, the offense is much better, but it actually isn't.
Okay.
I'm going to take New England plus the 7 against Kansas City. Obviously, Kansas City now looks like by far the best team in the league, and they may be, but I think New England here will slow the game down. They will run the ball. They will run Cam. And obviously, Andy knows that they're going to try to do this, so there may be some gamesmanship where Cam will try to get the ball long and they'll do some play action and whatnot. But I expect New England to play pretty slow. And I expect them to lay back, like Baltimore obviously is a team that likes to blitz more than anyone else. And so in that game where Mahomes performed so well against the blitz that, they just played right into Kansas City's hands. I expect New England to have a much smarter game plan. To play some zone, to definitely not try to create so many broken play opportunities for Kansas City. I expect them to be able to move the ball and control the ball a bit on offense. So I like New England plus a 7 here.
New England is very interesting. You could not have a different style of quarterback more noticeable than Cam Newton, who's running all the time, and Tom Brady from last year. You said something a couple of minutes ago that Bill Belichick has traditionally beaten the spread in a lot of games. Are there statistics like that for certain coaches? Are there coaches who would surprise us because although they seem to be good coaches, they don't beat the spread? Or is Belichick the paragon of all of this stuff?
He really is the paragon of it, and it's pretty interesting because, there are a lot of things that the New England does traditionally that have made them beat the spread. One is the sort of lack of turning the ball over, which makes everyone think about Deflategate. And the other thing that they tend to do well is have really good scoring efficiency and inside the red zone and like the prevention of scoring efficiency inside the red zone. So these are things that they've traditionally done well enough that people typically think are random or noise or not predictive going forward, but they do it well enough that it seems like there's something there.
He's better than ever. I mean, he's impossible to deal with on a personal level. I've found that many times, but boy, he's good. I mean, he's really good, yeah. Belichick. He's really good. All right, what else? You got a fifth game for us?
Yeah, my fifth game is just going to be the Niners minus the 7. Philly is a mess. We thought maybe they might turn things around last week. But they're a mess. And even it's interesting because, I've been noting that some of these analytical coaches that, like made their way by being strong analytically, and certainly Peterson in that Super Bowl was known for that and that whole season. But he seems to have kind of like lost his way on some of the stuff, especially in that overtime where it almost seemed like he was playing for a tie. San Francisco obviously is just so beat up, but their front office and, they're just brilliant. And they clearly have done a good job having people behind these positions that are able to step in. And they have a system that works. I mean, what they did to the Giants last week was truly impressive. And I expect them to come home and put a shellacking on the Eagles here.
Do you think, is Carson Wentz, do we reach a point where Carson Wentz, they just say, you know what? We got to go in a different direction. He's just not it. He's not what we thought. We were wrong.
It's hard for me to believe. The skill set that he possesses and how well he played, as a rookie and early in his career, it's just hard for me to believe that he has lost that skill set. I certainly thought that he was going to be a great quarterback. I think it'll be hard for them to give up. I think if he's certainly going to have this whole year to sort of fix things. And I don't see him getting benched this year, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, they did draft Jalen Hurts, so.
See, what's interesting, I guess, as you go around the league, you look at these things. I don't think Sam Darnold's any good. I mean, I just don't. I mean, I thought he threw a lot of interceptions in college. He gets sacked all the time. I don't think he's, you know, worth what the Jets passed up. Like, they passed up Josh Allen, they passed up Lamar Jackson, and they settled on Sam Darnold. And even last night, I didn't see anything spectacular. Do you? What do you think of him?
Well, when you play for that professional team that's in L.A. in college, you tend yeah. to have a lot of big windows to throw the ball into. Do you remember a guy by the name of Matt Leinart?
Who sure.
looked like a world beater
in
college. And that's the reality of it. These guys in college, these windows are so big to throw the ball into, and these guys are so open that you don't have to be accurate, right? And then the level, like the biggest skill that you need as a quarterback in the NFL is accuracy. And if you don't have that, and sometimes for these, like an USC quarterback, it's all hard to know how accurate they are because the windows they're throwing into are so big.
Yeah, I agree. Jeff's podcast with Rufus Peabody is called Bet the Process. You can access it wherever you access podcasts. If you listen to this, you can listen to that. Thank you, Jeff.
Hey, Tony, one last thing.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys have talked about this year, but the scoring is way up. And
yes.
one of the things that's been done, and analysis has been done, has been the amount of penalties that have been called, specifically offensive holding. I think it's down almost 50%. One thing to continue watching for people out there that bet are these totals, the overs versus the unders, obviously, and overs have been showing quite a bit. Most of us that bet expect this to correct and expect unders to become value soon, but when that is, we don't know. But one leading indicator for this may be watching the number of penalties that are called, whether it's false starts, not because of no fan noise, or if it's offensive holding or defensive, pass interference.
Ooh, a tip. Thank you. I got to pass that on to Chuck Todd. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
Jeff Ma, boys and girls, we will take a break. We'll come back with jingles and emails. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the second time we're doing this ad. I'm intrigued by this ad. I think it is well written, and I think the subject matter is very, very interesting. It's playoff time in the NBA, and you know what that means. We're in for some questionable calls and referee controversy. Bad calls are part of the game, but from 2003 to 2007, some of those calls weren't mistakes. The fix was in. In 2007, an NBA referee was caught betting on games, but not just any games, games that he officiated. That referee, Tim Donaghy, wasn't placing small personal bets. He was at the center of a billion-dollar scheme making big money for the mafia. Whistleblower is a new podcast from Tenderfoot TV. Follow along as journalist Tim Livingston investigates this scandal from all sides, even looking beyond one referee and into some of the most controversial playoff and finals games. You will hear from NBA champion Rasheed Wallace, former NBA head coach George Karl, former mobster. I wonder how you get out of the mob. Former mobs who just retire? Is that how it works? Michael Fanzisi, and many more, including Tim Donaghy himself. Plus, it's narrated by soprano star Michael Imperioli. Whistleblower is available now. Search Whistleblower in your podcast app and subscribe. I'm unfamiliar with Tim Livingston, but this sounds to me like it would be fun to listen to.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Mr. Tony checks to see if his garden's ripened. He finds mashed tomatoes all over the place. There's a baby deer, she's trembling and she's frightened. He's petrified and frozen in her gaze. Because he's afraid of everything. Hungry squirrels, falling trees, an inch of snowfall in December, getting taxed by AOC.
I am afraid of that.
It's a flight without a Xanax, or ice cream without a sink. Oh, he's afraid of everything.
It's so nice to hear Jerry Negrelli again. It's so nice. He's so good at this. He's actually the master of this. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. That's it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, I just want to say, dear sir and madam, will you read my book? It took me years to write. Will you take a look? It's based on a novel by a man named Lear, and I need a job, so I want to be a paperback writer. That's a great song by the Beatles. 60 years old. Great song. Thanks to our guests today, Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports, Jeff Ma, host of the podcast Bet the Process, and we hear that James will be with us next week. We hope. Thanks to our sponsors today, Lincoln Financial, Simply Safe, and Whistleblower, the new podcast hosted by Tim Livingston. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We have a lot of Yankee Doodle, a lot of it, from Paul Lutz in Worthington, Ohio. Longtime little first-time emailer. How long? I remember reading you and Wilbon in the Washington Post. I haven't heard you call him Mike that Toddlin' Town Wilbon in a while. That was shame that it didn't work out. Oh, I love the column on the name change for Les Boulets to the Supremes. Shame it didn't work out. I moved from the D.C. area in 1997 and missed the columns. The first program I set up on my DVR was PTI. Anyway, for Yankee Doodle. Yankee Doodle was a British song used to make fun of the Americans. Yankee was Dutch slang for a rube, and doodle was English slang for a simpleton. Two slurs in one. Riding a pony indicated that he had little money and couldn't afford a carriage or even a real horse. As for putting a feather in his hat and calling it macaroni, putting a feather in his hat, this poor simpleton might think is the height of fashion. And macaronis were what fashionable, foppish, and possibly effeminate young men were called by the British at the time. Really quite a rude little ditty. How about that? When the British surrendered at Yorktown, Marquis de Lafayette insisted on playing the song to further humiliate the British. How very French. Whether the American army didn't get the joke or liked the sarcasm, we may never know, but the song stuck. Paul Lutz, Worthington, Ohio. Can I now become the show's honorary doctor of history? Yeah, sure. That was good. From Bruce Brewdog Soilau, S-O-I-L, Soilau, E-A-U. Dear Captain Satchmo Kornheiser, PhD, Hafwaf, I offer clarity for the macaroni question. The song Yankee Doodle was originally sung by British troops to lampoon the colonial army. Macaroni was a slang term used by enlisted British soldiers to the rank insignia on British officers' hats. In the song, the feather is the macaroni, lampooning the colonialist foolish attempt to mimic British officers. Modern equivalents are scrambled eggs for the gold oak leaves on the visors of combination hats and fruit salad for the ribbon bars on the chest. Information for life. Shout out to Haley Slaughter. That's fantastic. This is so great. From Steve the Sycophant. Here's more than you wanted to know about Yankee Doodle Hat and the macaroni. The tune for Yankee Doodle and some of the words date back to at least the 15th century in Holland about a doodle, which meant fool or simpleton. In the 70s, macaroni referred to a type of fancy wig, which was in extreme fashion. It came to mean a man who dressed and spoke in an outlandishly affected and effeminate manner. So in British conversation, Yankee Doodle Dandy implied unsophisticated misappropriation of high-class fashion. British military officers sang the song to mock the Americans with whom they served in the French and Indian War. The Yankee Doodle who stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni was a simpleton. So great. Americans picked the song up as one of defiance and added verses to it to the Revolutionary War that mocked the British troops and hailed George Washington. The current version of Yankee Doodle Dandy is attributed to Edward Bangs, a Harvard sophomore who was also a Minuteman, that is, a member of the Massachusetts Militia Unit. I couldn't find out if Mr. Bangs himself was a doodle, so there you have it. The feather in the hat is a macaroni, but no pasta is involved. From so Brett Miller in... Huh? What?
This all feels like fake news about the British. I feel very offended by all this.
I love this. From Brett Miller in Clarksburg, who's a senior master sergeant in the Air Force. A couple of years ago, when I had one of my pieces for French horn and piano played on the show, Solissa speculated that the acronym for my professional degree stood for Doctor of Musical Authority, DMA. That, combined with my occupation as a military musician, gives me the confidence to assist you and Michael in the modifier conundrum in Yankee Doodle. These are all so smart. Macaroni does refer to the hat after having had a feather placed in it, used as a comparison to the fancy wigs or macaroni that the British were known to sport during the time of the Revolutionary War. The ditty Yankee Doodle was originally used by British soldiers to mock the Yankee rubes they were fighting. They felt the Yankees were a boorish, unsophisticated lot that attempted to emulate high style by sticking feathers in their caps and having the audacity to compare those adulterated pieces of headgear to a fine British wig. However, after the Yankees trounced the Brits in the Battle of Saratoga in September of 1777, the Yanks used the song to taunt the failed Brits as they slunk out of town like the stinking dogs that they were, he writes. After all, how could the Brits fall to such pathetic losers? Thereafter, Yankee Doodle became a rallying cry for our side and has been one of our patriotic standards ever since.
Let's get into Row,
this
Row, Row Your
so
Boat next
great.
Week. And the verse, if you see a crocodile, don't forget to scream.
This is the smartest group of listeners in the entire world. Yes. From John Smith, He writes, and he's in New South Wales, Australia. I was listening to your show recently, and you were talking about the game Steal the Bacon. Growing up in Fairfield, Australia, we played a similar game called Steal the Car. This involved walking down either side of the street, and the first one to break into a car and steal it and get back to their friend's place to strip it for parts was the winner. We also played similar games called Steal the Handbag, Steal the Money, and Steal the Jewels. They were great, great games growing up until you lose and got caught. I apologize for sharing this story so long after yours, but I get limited time on the computer and spend most of it writing to the Prime Minister pleading for freedom. And from Jim in Colo, C-O-L-O, I guess it's Colo, not Colo. I was going to say Colorado, but it's Colo, Iowa. Your discussion on Steal the Bacon brought back a memory of my youth in the 1960s. Not being athletically gifted, I rarely did well in various games. However, once when playing Steal the Bacon at a meeting of the Randall Rustlers 4-H Club, I did manage to steal the bacon, a chalkboard eraser. As I dashed back to my side in the rather narrow Bassett, Wisconsin town hall, I attempted to break my sock-covered feet on the waxed wood floor without success. Needless to say, I planted my face into the wall of the town hall. But at least I had the bacon. These are great emails today. Absolutely great. If you're out on your bike, everyone, as always, do wear white. I hate pumpkins.
Blessings like the stars from my front porch swing, like prayers that drift along the wind. I don't have much use for that which other people cling to. I don't take for granted many things. Do you remember that lightning flash? The storm came on so fast. I still feel gripped between my teeth. Forsaken me see.